The second question in this particular FAQ looks at The Guardian, and the question is that The Guardian explicitly state that they want an intelligent debate in the comment fields. Do you think there might be a risk that people The Guardian does not consider being intelligent might be shut out of the debate? For example, those who do not have a degree, perfect language, or so on. I think that's to misunderstand, really, the way that The Guardian operates and I guess what they talk about when they talk about an intelligent debate. And this is also a question that obviously someone from The Guardian, like Meg Pickard, could answer in more detail. But what they mean by an intelligent debate is essentially they want a debate where people are exchanging opinions that are informed, that are not belligerent, that are not trollish or just there to get a rise out of people and so on. And they have an extremely sophisticated system in place in their comment management and community management that supports that objective. So, for example, you mentioned people who don't have a degree or perfect English, that wouldn't constitute a reason to block someone out of a debate. what would be a reason is someone insulting another person personally, for example. That would be something that is not contributing to the debate. Or someone... I don't really want to give any other examples, but... that they manage those debates in a very subtle and sophisticated way that involves, for example, you mentioned shutting out of a debate, people's abilities to post in comment threads on The Guardian is on a sliding scale, and that depends on how many contributions they've made. It depends on how many of those have been flagged as potentially flamey, for example, and a person might get to a point where they, if they post a comment, it is not automatically published and it is pre-moderated, for example. And there might be other stages as well. And these things fade over time as well. So if someone says something bad and says a series of bad things, then a couple of months later that bad karma, if you like, it expires. So, like I said, it's a very sophisticated system. Language, I don't think, has anything to do with it. Education doesn't have anything to do with it. It's not about how well someone expresses themselves. It's about the substance of what they say. And if what they're saying is, the other person who's commenting here is, something racist or something that is inciting hate crime, for example, or a libelous, then those things will be taken off and that person might be flagged up as someone who's not necessarily contributing to this intelligent debate that they mention. So, yes, that does risk, it doesn't just risk, it does result in people being shut out of a debate, but for a debate to take place, you need to sometimes shut people out of it. And that's one of the ugly things about community management and debate management, if you like, generally, is that it does involve excluding people. And that takes me on to the next point, which is, you ask, might a conclusion be that The Guardian use comment fields to mirror their trademark? I think what you're saying here is to express their brand. And the answer is absolutely. The Guardian's comment threads are there as a place for a particular community, a community of Guardian readers, to exchange opinions. And that is part of their brand, their kind of community is part of the Guardian identity. And again, the pub analogy really applies here. With online spaces, if you want to have any kind of coherent conversation, anything that goes anywhere, that actually results in any kind of consensus or it has an informative quality, then you need to manage that space like you would manage an event, like you would manage a pub, like you would manage a public space, to ensure that people with important views, with valid opinions, with insightful comments, that Vaughs get to be heard. Because if you just let everyone shout and you let the space be invaded by people who just want to mess it up, then the people who would contribute the interesting stuff would just not stick around. So it's about managing spaces, and that's the same in terms of managing physical spaces as managing digital ones. And you know, we accept the ways that public spaces are managed. Sometimes we feel that they're managed too aggressively, but we accept generally the principle that public spaces should have some form of management to ensure that, you know, that healthy discussions take place and so on. Rolling on from that, I'm going to go on to the next question, because this is also relevant. Could we thereby claim that the newspapers do offer debate, but only for a certain elite? Again, I think the word elite is probably wrong. I think they do offer debate, but only for a certain group of people, and that is the group of people who are willing to adhere, if you like, to the ground rules of that particular debate. Now, actually, I think a lot of newspapers offer debate for everyone, and they just open up a space and they don't really ever go back there again. And quite often the standards of debate and conversation are very low there, because people, it's quite clear that the news organisation doesn't have any investment in it. They don't particularly care about that space, and the people who are using that space don't necessarily either. So I think newspapers offer debate, but for a certain group of people who gather around their stories and their brand. And again, that's the same as in public spaces, you know, the spaces in the town centre which are occupied by certain groups of people, and spaces in other places which are occupied by different people, and so on. And you look all around the web and you see different communities, different groups of people gathering in different places, Facebook groups, blogs, Twitter lists, and so on. It's not particularly unusual. I think that if we want a healthy discussion, then we need to support people who are pushing that discussion forward. Next question. Newspaper and traditional media has during history been considered as the overall forum for freedom of speech. Would you say they still are? Well, yes. I mean that's a it's a very open question, and I'm trying to think of anywhere else which is the overall forum for freedom of speech. The classic line about the media is that it allows a country to have a national conversation. It allows a country to have a conversation with itself, and the media traditionally has been the space where people can kind of see the conversation that is taking place in that country between citizens and between the government and between other sources of power, like corporations, like the police, the judiciary, and so on. And you can see those conversations taking place across the media. Now, when you look at the context that you've kind of introduced with comment fields, I think you can, you know, I don't think we can ever claim that it has been any sort of forum where everyone had an equal voice. There were particular parts of society who had a voice, the government, the police, the judiciary. There were organisations, the unions, campaigning groups, charities. And as a journalist, those are the places you go to first. And it can result in very formulaic journalism that involves one party saying or doing one thing, and then you go to someone on the roughly on the other side to get some sort of reaction. And that leaves out all sorts of groups in society who aren't part of those formal organisations, are not represented by those organisations. And the interesting thing about online technologies is that it allows people to form ad hoc organisations that now have a voice in the media. So they can, for example, make something trend on Twitter. You can have a Facebook group that campaigns against against student loans fees, and they suddenly have a voice and they force a bank to climb down on particular plans. So I guess the traditional media has been complemented now by other forums for freedom of speech, as you say, other forums for the national conversation, which includes social media like Facebook, and to a lesser extent Twitter, and to a lesser extent the internet generally, and any website that can gather a momentum of attention. But traditional media is still a very large and significant part of that, and they can notice these patterns and draw attention to them and amplify them and react to them. So they do play a part in part of the ecosystem, but I think that Forum for Freedom of Speech, as you describe it, has probably broadened now beyond newspaper and traditional media, but still includes them. Next question. I'm going to go on to this. The Guardian keeps no data over what categories of comments are most common to be deleted. Is that a problem? I think it is. I'm surprised at that, actually, because I think there are... I'm not sure what you mean by categories of comments, but I know that there are particular types of content which are more closely monitored than others, and some content generally, not of Guardian specifically, but some content generally which newspapers watch closely. So, for example, any article about an ongoing court case is either going to have its comments closed or moderated very closely for fear of contempt of court. Any article about immigration is likely to be monitored or closed because of the risk of racist comments. Likewise, any article about abortion, any article about the Israel-Palestine conflict. And there are various other subjects which really attract very clearly divided or very opinionated or hateful comments. So I'm surprised that, you'd be interested to find out which, aside from those obvious subjects, which types of content need most attention and tend to get the most deletions. So shall I move on to the final question? How am I doing for time? I think I'll pause and move on to a new booth.